Okay, let's unpack this. We're doing a deep dive into what is, I think, one of the most remarkable legal documents of the modern era, the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa Act. That's Act 108 of 1996.
It really is, and it's so much more than just a legal document. I mean, its core mission is restorative.
Restorative, how so?
Well, it's laying out this comprehensive framework to, heal the divisions of the past and build a society on democratic values, on social justice.
And fundamental human rights.
Exactly. The ultimate goal is a truly united and democratic South Africa.
So that immediately tells you this isn't going to be dry legalese. It's setting out these really powerful, positive aspirations. And to get to the heart of that, you have to start with the Bill of Rights.
You have to. Chapter 2. The Constitution itself calls it the cornerstone of
And
democracy.
it guarantees rights for everyone in South Africa. The big ones that jump out are human dignity, the right to life, and of course, equality.
Those are the foundational pillars.
That equality section, its scope is just incredible. It explicitly prohibits unfair discrimination on so many
It's
grounds.
an extensive list, yeah. Race, gender, sex, color, sexual orientation, disability, religion, and so on. It's designed as this comprehensive firewall against prejudice.
And its real power is that it's meant to redress systemic inequality from the past.
Absolutely. But what's fascinating is that even these expansive rights, they aren't absolute.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, they can be limited, but only if that limitation is, and I'm quoting here, reasonable and justifiable in an open and democratic society.
But I'm guessing some rights are totally untouchable. They can't be limited, even in a crisis.
That's right. Certain rights are non-derogable. So human dignity and the right to life, those can't be suspended, not even during a declared state of emergency.
Wow, that really institutionalizes a baseline of respect.
It does.
Okay, before we move on to the government structure, we have to talk about the languages. This always blows my mind.
11 official languages.
11. It's hard enough to govern with one.
And it goes even further than that. Beyond that long list, which includes Sepedi, Isizulu, English, Afrikaans, the Constitution mandates respect for languages of marginalized communities.
Like the Khoi and San languages.
Yeah, so the Khoi, Nama, and San languages, sign language, and even other community languages like German, Hebrew, Sanskrit. It's a total project of cultural inclusion.
So let's pivot to governance. The document outlines this unique structure called cooperative government. We all know the three spheres: national, provincial, local. But what makes this model so different?
The key word there is cooperative. The emphasis isn't just on the spheres existing, but on their interdependence.
So they have to work together.
They must. This decentralized model was explicitly designed to make sure accountability runs through every single level of governance, from the very top down to the smallest municipality. It's about preventing power from concentrating in one place.
And speaking of accountability, that brings us to those independent institutions, the famous Chapter 9 bodies.
The constitutional watchdog.
Exactly. What's their collective purpose?
Well, you're talking about the Public Protector, the Human Rights Commission, the Commission for Gender Equality, the Electoral Commission. Their job is to strengthen democracy. They are explicitly independent of the government and accountable directly to the National Assembly.
So they're a crucial check and balance.
A vital one.
And of course, checks on power naturally lead to checks on money. Chapter 13 is all about finance and transparency.
Right. And it lays out very strict requirements for managing public funds. All revenue raised nationally has to go into the National Revenue Fund.
And that's to ensure transparency.
Yes, and the Constitution requires all national, provincial, and municipal budgets to promote that transparency and accountability. These are the built-in safeguards against corruption.
So when you put it all together, you have this incredibly detailed roadmap for governance, for financial transparency, and this radical commitment to human rights. It's just a massive statement of intent.
It is. And maybe as a final thought to leave you with, the Constitution says that courts must apply customary law where it's applicable. But, and this is the key, that customary law is subject to the Constitution. So, given those huge guarantees of equality and gender rights in the Bill of Rights, how do you think courts navigate the conflicts that will inevitably come up between traditional legal systems and these fundamental constitutional values? That tension is a constant negotiation.